If you like to gamble, I tell you I'm your man. You win some, lose some, it's all the same to me.
Hello and welcome to the official Motorhead podcast, The Motorcast. I'm your host, Howard H. Smith. You may know me as lead singer with UK thrash band Acid Rain, or from my heavy metal podcast, Talking Bollocks. My name is highlighted in the description of this podcast. If you click on it, that will take you through to a link that is to pretty much over 400 interviews that I've done over the last 8 years with the great and the good of heavy metal. But here I am, your guide around this virtual museum that we are building that is stacked full of interesting interviews and anecdotes about the one and only Motorhead. And today's is no different. In fact, we might even be talking a real physical museum instead of just the virtual one we're building here. But more on that in a bit. Firstly, if you haven't already subscribed, then please subscribe. All you need to do is, wherever you're listening to this, there will be some sort of bell, there'll be a button, there'll be something that says subscribe. Click on that, and a brand new episode of the Motorcast will appear in your device whenever we release one. But also, coming up, we have the reissues of Iron Fist, the 40th anniversary editions. They're going to be out on the 23rd of September, 2022. Make sure you keep your eyes out on for those. There is a triple LP, a double CD, and a black and blue LP, and digital. So make sure you keep your eyes and your ears open and you get those. Now on to our interview. As always, I had a really good time doing this. This is with Andrew Edwards, who lives in Stoke, where Lemmy is from. And Andrew thinks that there should be a statue of Lemmy somewhere, well, he's got a good idea where, in Stoke, to mark the fact that that's his hometown, and also some other bits and pieces. So, without further ado, let's find out what Andrew's planning. Welcome to the Motorcast, Andrew Edwards. Hello. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolute pleasure, mate. So, you know, I know you listen, so you know what's coming next. How did Motorhead enter your life? How did the love affair begin?
It was either the last or next or last year at school in Stoke-on-Trent. And somebody brought in Overkill. I know it's one of those things where you bring records in on the last day of term.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I'm old enough to have done that as well. Yes, listeners.
Well, it must have been one of my mates' older brother who'd lent him this, because we couldn't afford albums at that age. And it might have even been the green vinyl Overkill. But which was the first one that most people kind of got hold of. Everybody bought the first album second. But Overkill was the one that kind of brought everyone's attention. And I can remember lads saying, this new punk album. So you look around at the back and these guys with long hair and drums with mouths in and things. And it's like, oh, this is a bit unusual. Because they were kind of factions then. You know, if you got long hair, you couldn't like punk and vice versa. And Flash, can you remember the meltdown when Rainbow got Graham Bonney to sing and he got short hair?
Yeah. There's like a through line of several interviews where people have, you know, brought this up, which is what, you know, what you don't realize now is that you go back all those years and, you know, Motorhead were, and some would say remained, but were kind of seen as a rock slash metal band. But also, they were kind of like so loud and unruly that it was, a lot of people were saying it was punk, and they had long hair. It just seemed to sort of confuse everybody.
Yeah. I mean, my other favourite band at that time, besides Motorhead, came to be, was The Damned. And as you know, they played together. And I'd still say that The Damned version with Lemmy on Over the Top is better than the B-side. You know, we got Rat on the drums instead of Phil, which is sacrilege to say that, but I think the Damned and Motorhead version of Over the Top is probably more lively
Oh, controversial. Controversial. You're going to get hate mail for that, mate.
But no, I mean, the thing about discovering Motörhead at school was that this lad's from Stoke. This lad's from
Yeah.
Stoke-on-Trent, where we were from. So instantly, like, mega hero status and cult status. And then when, and in the first few years, as the classic lineup, they seem to play Stoke every 6 months. I think they probably did. I saw them, the Overkill tour, the Bomber tour, both of which I think was 79. Ace of Spades the year after, and of course the famous Vale Park heavy metal holocaust. I mean, everybody in the city who didn't go to that got on the free buses and had a free trip to Blackpool that was arranged because the residents were complaining about, this is the largest PA that's ever been assembled in the UK, and we complain when we don't like this. So the promoters paid them all to go to Blackpool for the day.
That's so seriously. I thought you were joking. They
No,
seriously
that's true.
arranged. They
It's true.
seriously arranged three buses for
Yeah.
residents to spend the day in a different town.
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, and it was loud as well. But if anything, there was they played another venue called Bingley Hall, the one
Yeah.
that Brian May always says was the Queen's best gig, Stafford Bingley Hall, which is like a basically a massive cow shed. And I can remember that was so loud, Howard, that you put your head up above the person in front of you, and you're instantly physically sick. It was so loud.
Wow, that now that is loud.
I could have been the siding. I mean, I was 15.
Well, yeah, but I mean, again, we've had people on here talking about it, and you know, I mean, there was records of it, the band being heard over 10 miles away or something ridiculous like that.
And used to get tinnitus for a couple of days. That was normal. That was like a good night out.
Yes. Oh, how stupid we were.
And all zealots at the front putting the head in the speaker bins and stuff like that. But no, that period was fantastic for music generally, and to have a band that had some connection to where I was from at the Vanguard, has been special to now, and that's why it's taken us a while. But myself and a few friends have decided that Lemmy deserves a hometown statue, so we can kind of extend that bond backwards and forwards. The world should know where Lemmy's from and what the people are like from there. Because I'd like to think that the people I live amongst have got some of the qualities that Lemmy is famous for. That kind of
Yeah.
like. In fact, that's how the statue project came about, actually. Two friends of mine went to a guy's funeral. And they said, "Gosh, he was so like Lemmy. There's some people from Stoke who are just like that. Just do their own thing and brash, but retain that kind of gentlemanliness despite the scariness."
Yes, yeah, and the and of course the, you know, just being down to earth and humble.
Sure, yeah, and I'd love to think that some of that at least is down to Lemmy's genetics. So, we'd like to kind of draw attention to that, and at the same time offer something back,
Yeah.
because statues, in my experience, can be the start of something rather than the end. So we've got big plans. We'd love to see a Vale Park 2 concert, certainly a museum, a Motörhead museum in his hometown. I'm sure we could
Yeah.
fill that really quickly. In fact, one of my friends, Rogue Best, who him and his brother Pete Best have the Beatles Museum on Massey Street in Liverpool, and he's offered to help us set that up. Because that if nobody's been to that the Beatles Museum on Massey Street, it's absolutely fantastic. It's like three floors, each one a different era of the Beatles, and it's not just big photographs. They've actually got the authentic stuff in there,
Yeah.
which kind of brings the story to life. When you're looking at the doll that was in All You Need Is Love video, and it's there, it's mad. So
Yeah.
we'd like to do that.
Well, that's admirable. That's admirable. And let's face it, as you know, because previous guest was was responsible for creating the huge Hellfest Lemmy. So you know, there's one over there, and there really should be. Presumably, you're going to use that as a stick to beat the local council with.
We'll mention it. I mean, there's one in the Rainbow as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But you know, like Shakespeare, you fans would want to go and see the Globe Theatre, but they'd also expect there to be something in Stratford, where he's from, as well. And embarrassingly, we haven't got anything to commemorate Lemmy's birthplace. And the Hellfest statue, you know, obviously Lemmy in a later part of his big career. And what we'd like to do specifically is focus on that period, late 70s, early 80s, where, and it would be Lemmy on stage as well. It is going to be, you know, with his Rickenbacker and looking like the god that he was on that stage.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it is totally fitting that, you know, these hometowns should mark that, you know, one of their most famous sons, you know, even more famous than Slash.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's from a couple of miles up the road. But
I know what it's like at the Potteries, a couple of miles up the road. That's like, yeah, that completely rules him out, doesn't it?
No. People are proud of Slash being here too. Of course they are. And of course, Discharge.
Yes.
It was still gay, aren't they?
Yeah, well, it's. I mean, I was going to say it's a bit of a hotbed, but it's not really, is it? It's like basically we're talking Slash, Discharge, Motorhead. You know, that's not many, but when Stoke delivers as a band, they're usually going to be pretty legendary.
Yeah, and something kind of comes over in those kind of characters. There's kind of a lot of pent up something or other because. You know, Stoke is the Potteries, but really it's built on the pits. And I come from a former industrial city where going to work was a mile down and then a mile crawl before you hit the kill face.
Yeah.
And just like in Wales, where a lot of the people who came to work, the pits of Stoke-on-Trent came from, my family came from Wales to work on the pit. There's this thing about singing and making a noise, you know, to blast the dust out of your lungs, brass bands and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's the origins of heavy metal, the genre, obviously, from, you know, from Birmingham. And, you know, Ozzy has always said, and well, everybody in Sabbath has always said, you know, the noise of those machines, that heavy metal that they used to listen to all day, you know, is a kind of foundation of that sound.
It's weird that, like, you know, Tony Iommi lost his tips working in a factory, and that weird accident created the sound of the Black Sabbath.
Yeah,
you know, tuned down guitar. And...
Well, as far as we're aware, Lemmy didn't have any industrial accidents in Stoke.
No, but he did go and see the Beatles in Liverpool, and that people always used to say that was a big influence. Because arguably, you know, the Beatles in the early days, the Leather Beatles certainly were like a punk band. You know, the amount of energy they had. So you can sort of see the connection. And, well, you know, Lemmy was a big rock and roll fan, obviously. And, you know, Little Richard obviously was a big deal to him. Johnny Burnett and all those guys. And to think that, like, you know, someone like him took all that influence and repackaged it and pumped it out at a greater volume with that amount of power. I feel really strongly that, you know, that the city of Stoke-on-Trent should be kind of all about that, because as the guys that you have on the podcast prove, it is such a big influence right across the world.
Yeah, and also I think, you know, genreless. You know, it's like this is the weird thing. It's like, it's, you know, name a band and you can put them in a box. You can say, right, they're hard rock, they're heavy metal, they're thrash metal, whatever. Yeah. And then it comes to Motorhead, and you're just going to have a big argument. And the truth is, they don't belong in any of those boxes. Motorhead's Motorhead, that's it.
Yeah.
And it's certainly something that, you know, any city should be proud of. So did you see him a lot when, you know, in your formative years? Because by the sounds of it, you were at, you know, some pretty legendary gigs.
Yeah, no, every time they came around, I went to see them. I guess interest kind of fell away a little bit after the Iron Fist Brian Robertson kind of period. I still kind of checked in on them and stuff. But the golden years in my growing up with those early gigs is the Victoria Hall, as the venue was called.
Yeah.
And I can remember, I think it was the Bomber Tour, and they'd played all their encores. The bands had played every song they'd got, and the crowd didn't want to go. And they switched the lights on, and people were doing that slow stamping, slow clapping. And it was, I mean, back in those days, people earned an encore. It wasn't kind of written into the set list.
Yes, yes.
But this was like 15, 20 minutes, and then finally they switched the lights off. And this stomping and just carried on. And the crowd just didn't know what to do. They were willing the band back on. And they started singing football songs. And in the end, I think it was You'll Never Walk Alone, which is like a Liverpool song. But out of desperation, the crowd kind of joined in singing this. And it was loud enough to hear, not just in the dressing room, in the next city. And Filthy came on first. And he got a scarf above his head. And I'm going to say it was a Stoke scarf. And he was swaying side to side. And I swear, Howard, there was tears running down his face. He was moved by the power of the demand for an encore.
Yeah.
And that's why we want to make a statue here, because that's still hanging in the air somewhere, that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. And so how far have you got? Have you have you started? Well, A, there's so much to do, isn't there? You've got to try and find a place. If it's on public land, which presumably is ideal, then you're going to have to deal with the council. You're going to have to, go through getting any designs approved. But first of all, you've got to get a site approved. So how does it start, and at what stage are you at in these organizations?
Okay. Well, as a sculptor, I've made a couple of designs based around 80, 81, Lemmy on stage, bass slightly to one side, leaning up to the mic. It has to be something dynamic and representing that presence on a stage. But this is a fan initiative. And at every stage of this process, we want to engage with fans, and wherever possible, make that accessible so people can actually participate. What we've got assembled, we've got a company, we've got Productions BC, who are going to be an events company. So we're very much looking at live events to go alongside this statue. And one of the things we're looking at is we'd love to think we could do a Heavy Metal Holocaust 2 at Vale Park.
Wow.
And the statue, it makes complete sense to be around. That was in one of the six towns that Stoke-on-Trent is known as.
Dude, you know who needs to headline that gig, don't you? I think it's got to be Metallica.
Yeah, yeah.
Really? I mean, having such huge Motorhead fans, and I've seen Lemmy on stage with Metallica. I mean, if you've been to see Metallica, you've probably seen them with Lemmy at some point as well.
And
he was a huge, huge influence on that band musically and personally all the way growing up. And you may as well shoot for the stars, mate. Failing that, Guns N' Roses, get Slash back to his hometown.
Well, is that too, isn't it? Is that too? But I mean, I don't think the music world is short of people who are fans who would want to kind of acknowledge the influence of Lemmy. So, yeah. We are shooting for the stars, and we'd love to see that. And as well as an events company that's been set up to manage this project, we've got peripheral things as well that are all about community engagement, like a company called Rhythm Foundry, that is a music school based around drums, really. And the guy, Dean, who runs that, is going to partner us. And the idea of being able to offer some kind of entry level, you don't need anything but your energy, assistance for people into music, whether that's not just through gigging, but through helping them understand the wider aspects of the business, musicianship, and even an instrument library is something that, I'd love to see in Lemmy's name.
Yeah.
and you know, that within somewhere that people can visit for the museum, for the landmark of a statue, and to kind of carry on in a different form what you were doing with the Motorcast, because being able to bring people together from all different diverse places and experiences all around the subject of Motorhead is where, you know, friendships for life begin. It certainly has for me. And the family needs another meeting place. You know, we've got the online museum. It would be great to have like a living one now where people know that they're going to be amongst like-minded people and have a good time.
Yeah, I mean, but that's quite a tall order as well, because that involves presumably you know, dealing with the estate, trying to track down, you know, bits and pieces of memorabilia that people are prepared to donate. And but I guess we're getting ahead of ourselves here. I mean, how far? You know, let's be honest. I know, because we had a previous conversation. You haven't got permission for the statue yet. So you're a way off.
We've looked at various sites that we'd like, and of course, what the council, if it goes on any public land, think about this is key. But I think there's a great opportunity for Stoke-on-Trent to place itself as proudly furnishing the birthplace of a rock and roll legend that is Lennon.
Yeah, and also I think there's a worldwide interest in going to see a Motorhead museum with a statue of Lemmy, at, you know, in Stoke, the town he's from. That's we're bringing people from all around the world to Stoke pitch for the council, isn't it?
That's right, and the statue itself should serve as a kind of a document, because the way I work and the way I've looked at all the commissions I've done, whether it's the Beatles, Bowie, Bob Marley, all those guys I've made things for previously, I see myself as a kind of a journalist, that the detail has to be right because that's what people will look for.
Yeah.
So if they want to know what jeans Lenny wore in 1980, they'll look at the statue and go, oh, Wranglers, those. That's what the ones he wore. Or what particular model of Rickenbacker he was playing then. So that research is something that it's one of the best parts of my job, because I get to learn all kinds of stuff. Well, that's something I'd like to democratize as well. I can see, we haven't even got a website for this yet. We've got an email address that I'd like to give out where people can get in touch if they want to play a part. And the way that they can play a part isn't just through, you know, the fundraising and the kind of details of the statue's appearance, which has to be 100% right. It can't be vague. It's got to be exact. Then there are people who are experts in setting up websites, who are experts in kind of coordinating forums where people can share ideas and get those passed on. So
fundraising as well, a GoFundMe page and stuff like that.
Absolutely. I mean, I've cast an 18-inch model at the moment and then had that 3D printed just to kind of have a look at it.
Wow, really?
Yeah. And the advantage of modern technology and with 3D printing is you can kind of test things. You can test different plinths, different scales, different contexts. So you've got plenty of chance for it to get feedback. Because the main thing with something as a big a deal as a hometown Lemmy statue is that I would like to make sure that everybody is consulted who cares about it.
Yeah.
Because this isn't for any individual ego. This is for like the common cause and, you know, and the things that we all love and we all care about. So I'll be glad to kind of invite collaborations from all sources, informing that team, really, or adding to that team, because that's how we will achieve it. And we've done this before. You know, myself and my friends, we've created statues of Muhammad Ali, the English and German soldiers representing the Christmas truce in 1914. And even the Beatles itself, we didn't ask for permission to make the Beatles statue. We did it, showed it people and said, do you think this is a good idea? And people came forward and said, yeah, we'll help you with that. We'll sponsor this. We'll pay for that. We'll find permission for that.
Right, okay.
So that's a good track record and a good example that
yeah,
you can believe in something. And if it's good enough, people don't have any other choice than to give you money for it because it's just so necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, as you were saying earlier, build it and they will come, you know. Well, I will. I'll be there on opening day. So,
well, we definitely will build it, Aaron, because I can say I love my job and I would love to create a statue of Lenny more than anything I can think of. If I didn't get paid for what I do, I'd pay to do it.
Right.
So it is going to happen. It is going to happen. We are going to do it. It's just making sure that we involve enough people's interest to make it happen in exactly the right way. It's a one-off opportunity and we have to get it right.
Yeah, yeah. But as you say, it's not a pipe dream. It is something you've managed to achieve before. And that's great. Now, you threw in a couple of names there, the Beatles and Jimi Hendrix. How did you, well, you said, you know, you just put the Beatles one together and people liked it. So what was the Jimi Hendrix one like?
Oh no, I've not done a statue of Jimmy yet. I've just actually made a scale model of Jimmy's mate, Brian Jones, which is another figure that I'd like to see a statue for before he gets kind of laundered out of history completely.
Yeah.
But Bob Marley, Bee Gees, the Beatles, most of these jobs end up with just a few people being enthusiastic and saying, hey, shouldn't we do it? I mean, people used to stop my friend who owns the foundry, Chris, in Liverpool, that will eventually cast this statue, who cast all the other pieces that I've had the privilege of working on. And he used to say, excuse me, where's the Beatles statue? And he'd say, there isn't one. He said, no, come on. That was where the Beatles statue is. He said, no, honestly, there isn't one. And he was walking past HMV one day and he saw a massive big poster in L1 in Liverpool of Live at the BBC. It's just four lads walking down the street. It's just that's what the statue should be like. We shouldn't worry about exactly what instruments they wear or what chord they're playing. It should be four lads in their hometown looking like they belong there. So that was the concept for the statue. And it took a couple of years because to sculpt four figures takes a bit of time. And, you know, I have to cover that time. And but I had help and we got to the stage of making a scale model. And we took it to the waterfront in Liverpool and photographed it from crouching down against the Live building so he could get an idea what it would look like.
Yeah.
And we Bluetoothed that onto a projector at the Town Hall when they were celebrating 50 years of the Beatles returning to Liverpool in the Hard Day's Night preview. And people saw this picture behind the Cavern Beatles who were playing and thought, where's that statue come from? How come there's suddenly a full-size statue outside the Live building? And luckily, one of those people who was impressed enough was Bill Heckler, who owns the Cavern Club. And he came over, and the next day he said, we'd like to join forces with you and make this happen.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So that is what really, hello, listeners, come on. The Motorhead fan base has got just like everybody of every persuasion in it. Anybody who can help, presumably you want to get them in touch. So do you want to, what's the email address?
Well, I'm going to use my website, which is info@joesguitars.co.uk.
Right. So J-O-E-S guitars, all one word, Joe's Guitars.
Yeah. @co.uk, info@ or Andy@. I'm going to kind of see what interest there is there. And hopefully amongst that interest will be people who say, you want to do this kind of website. If you want a forum and you want to gather an opinion, you want this kind of website rather than this.
Yeah,
and there's people who are already brilliant at that. So, you know, I've got a job. I love my job. And there's people I'd like to kind of love their job and join in and be part of this team, be part of the band.
Yeah, yeah. But so basically, you want to put a team together because you can make the statue and you can make a really impressive statue and that'll be wonderful. But you want to put a team together that's going to help you capture all the information from the fan base. That's going to allow people to, you know,
it's how it represents. It needs to represent all those people.
Yeah.
And you can only do that by putting your heads together with other like-minded people and listening to what people say.
Yeah.
You know, we've got two ears and one mouth.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know for a fact the Motorhead fan base, and certainly the Motorcast fan base is huge, and there's all kinds of people in it. So hopefully, call to arms. Everybody out there is going to, be able to get behind you and let's try and make this happen.
I can see it happening. Because, we need another place to meet. We need another place to meet, and we need to be able to extend this conversation we're having now, worldwide, in the flesh. And people have got a lot to say to each other, as your podcast proves. And those stories are what keep people's legacy alive, aren't they?
Yeah.
I feel like, Motörhead's here eternally now because of the way that people have met each other, and the way that each one has got a little bit of that museum in their memory.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, look, I'm amazed you've got any memories of the Port Vale gig, because it sounds like it was so loud it would have just given you,
Oh, it's
permanent
amazing.
brain damage, never mind a little bit of tinnitus.
I mean, it was a long day. I can remember we got there in the morning, but it went pretty quick. I think the first band on was Vardis, and I always
Yeah.
remember that the guy, Steve Zodiac, is it the singer? And he used to put this talc in his hair, so when he shook his head and the cross lights hit it, it was like this kind of big kind of ambient cloud that kind of lit up around him. And then Ozzy, of course. I mean, Ozzy and Lemmy were hanging around outside the gig, and they're just kind of walking around, and people were chatting to them and stuff and getting autographs. And of course, they wore exactly the same clothes as they were walking around as they were on stage.
That's amazing. Just to imagine that, Ozzy and Lemmy, two absolute music icons, are just wandering around outside. People are just walking
Yeah.
up and chatting to them.
And I think he brought Jack on stage. I think Ozzy brought Jack Osbourne on stage when he, was really small. And
Yeah.
I think he got a little tassel jacket on. And
Brilliant.
well, no, that
Brilliant.
was really cool. And
Yeah, because it was Aussie. It was the Aussie band, wasn't it? Because they're, if I'm remembering rightly, were Sabbath supposed to be on, but they pulled because Aussie
that's
was on
it.
as well.
Yeah, and Ozzy made a bit of a thing of that. I don't want to let down the fans, I'll give you my bit of Sabbath. And he played a blinding set because he was like his original band with Randy Rhoads. And they just went down a storm. They just went down an absolute storm because of the circumstances, as well as, everybody loves Ozzy.
Yeah, but there was that sort of controversy in the background that kind of just meant there was a little there was it, like he meant it a little bit more. There was a little bit more at stake.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. And when Motörhead came on, and the skydivers that came on at the end when they played Bomber, and Lemmy got his heel stuck in the bomber rig, and his heel came off.
Yeah.
And I can remember him like taking the Mickey out of the roadie who came on and swapped boots with him. And
Yes. Well, we had that story right here on the Motorcast as well.
I think they were amazed too. It was one of those gigs where you could tell the band were impressed with the crowd, as the crowd were impressed with the band.
Yeah. And the thing is as well is that, I think the rise of Motorhead is always worth mentioning, because they were struggling to get a record deal. They struggled to get a record deal, but the minute they started putting records out, it was just it, there was an instant, I was going to say curiosity, but that's doing them a disservice really. There was an instant recognition by music fans everywhere that, like, there is room for this, whatever it is. Like, there's room for this, and let's have some more.
And those albums, and as you say, I mean, every track's quality on them, every track. And as I say, people bought Overkill first, where I was from, and then bought Motörhead second, which, as I remember, that was white vinyl, and Bomber was blue, because like coloured vinyl was a thing then.
Yeah, big time.
And every track.
I think it was I've mentioned this before. No Sleep Till Hammersmith was on gold vinyl. I can't remember. I think I got it when I was at school, and I was like, I've got it on gold vinyl. And it's like everybody who owned it turned around. It's like, yeah, I've got it on gold. Yeah, I've got it. Has anyone got it on black vinyl? No, everybody got it on gold vinyl.
Remember picture discs as well, because they used to be funny shape. You all used to warp, and they last about a month, and then you'd have this kind of bent piece of bacon on your turntable.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I might be wrong. My memory might be playing tricks on me. It might have been bronze vinyl.
Yeah, that would have been it, wouldn't it?
Like you say, you know, coloured vinyl was a thing back then, wasn't it? It was just, look at this.
Even When On Parole came out a little bit later. I think that was on coloured vinyl at first.
Yeah.
That's when everybody heard the original version of Motörhead then, you know, which is like quite different than the one on the first album.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is as well is I think that for that key original three-piece lineup, Iron Fist is getting getting the treatment, the re-release and everything else. But I think that album has really had this kind of reassessment over time, because people have gone back to it to go, hang on, this is the last time these three put an album out.
I think
from that perspective now, it's probably more appreciated now than it was at the time, because it was following Ace of Spades, which, let's face it, was virtually an impossible job.
Yeah, yeah. No, Iron Fist was it kind of got overlooked a little bit, which is strange, because you know, it's not a bad album at all. It's not, you know, it's really good.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
And of course, the reissue of No Sleep Till Hammersmith with all the extra live tracks on, that's been really great to hear all those as well.
Oh, I mean, yeah, absolutely. And all those gigs as well. Leeds Queen's Hall, which is a real like soft spot for me, because I spent as a kid, I spent a lot of time at the Leeds Queen's Hall for various different reasons. But also, you know, I did actually get to see a gig there one day. And horrific place to see a band. Bus Garage, just like literally, you know, you could stand at the back of the hall and like get every song about 2 seconds later. Terrible acoustics, but those No Sleep reissues are absolutely fantastic. I mean, the whole, you know, there's really good work being done on all of these things. I mean, the box set for Ace of Spades is unbelievable.
Amazing.
I mean, that is one of the perks of this job. Is, you know, I got sent the box set, the big vinyl box set, and I mean it's incredible. It really is. It's like a work of art. You know, it goes back to what you were saying earlier about detail.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the detail in, you know, in the packaging, in the way it's like lovingly restored and presented. You can tell that this is not, you know, this is being done by fans. This is, you know, right at its core, this is like authentic, you know, it's not just being chucked out to make a quick buck.
Yeah, it is those details. I mean, I can remember, you know, outside concert halls, and used to, as well as all the official gear, used to get all like the bootleg patches and t-shirts and stuff. And in amongst those were some really interesting things. And, I kind of pine for that, that, you know, to see what was out there and stuff, because you wanted to go on and go on. And that's like another reason why it'd be great to have a museum, because sometimes those little things bring memories back.
Yeah. Oh, I'll tell you what, some dodgy old bootleg merch from back in the day, that'd be a thing, wouldn't it? Unfortunately, of course, it was all so badly made that, you know, none of it made it out of that decade, but you never know. You never know.
Yeah, yeah. And I bet some of the posters have survived out from outside, because I can remember one of my mates used to take a wallpaper scraper and used to try and scrape the poster off after the gig.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I've got posters on my wall that were nicked off walls. You know, I mean, not scraped off like that, but there's got all of these bits and pieces. There's It's great to know there's somebody out there who is at least trying to bring everything together.
Yeah,
and
outside of the gigs, of course. I mean, you'd have your mates who you'd hang around with, but you know that feeling of that crowd and everybody's come there to see the same band and feeling the same thing. That's the thing you wanted to go on and on and on, and that's like the big impetus behind this idea of a statue, because you know it's a meeting place. That's what I'm after creating, really. You know, the statue is the likeness, but you just want a meeting place.
And that's a phrase you've used. That's a phrase you've used a few times, which I understand. It's I get what you mean. There's a lot of kind of, you know, pictures at people's gravesides and things like that, which are fine, and that's a lovely tribute, if a little morbid. Whereas to have something that represents Lemmy's life as opposed to his death is in his hometown where he came from. That would definitely be a bit special. It certainly makes Stoke worth visiting, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've got the statue of Stanley Matthews. It's actually a triple statue of Stanley Matthews, and that was the first big statue I got to do, and that works as a meeting place. And you get it's a game. You'll get as many away fans as home fans going over to have a look at the statue. And inevitably, a conversation will start, and there's some common ground. You know, you don't need to think what to talk about.
Yes.
It's right there in front of you.
So you were involved with that then?
Yeah, that was the first big statue I did, 2001, which was the year Stan died.
Yes. Stanley Matthews, for those listeners outside the UK, or maybe even inside the UK, he's a very, very famous footballer, and to this day is probably one of the only footballers to have an FA Cup final, you know, named after him, the Matthews final.
Famously played professional football until he was 50 and retired saying, "I could have stayed on for another 10 years.
different times indeed. But it's funny you should say, like you say, it's a meeting place, and you get home and away fans going and you know, and appreciating the statue and having pictures taken with it and having conversations, because you know, you always assume, you know, home and away football supporters would never mix, but it's things like that bring people together, as you say. And that's that kind of the meeting place for Motorhead fans in the UK would be a museum and statue.
And in music, of course, that expands even further and faster. Occasionally, I'll walk down to the waterfront in Liverpool where the Beatles statues are, and there's always people with them, and they're always like people talking to each other, and you can tell they're from different places.
Does that give you a sense of pride and accomplishment, achievement?
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, that was the intention of the statue. It was to create a kind of a time machine where, you know, people who've lived through different areas have got something in common, and, you know, stick them in front of an image of people they're familiar with and feel like they know. And you've got this license to be able to just start talking about your experience and share it with others. And that's what happens. That's what, especially the kind of statues like that one that's amongst the people. It's in the middle of the kind of the pierhead, and people can just walk right up to it. And I think a statue of Lemmy needs to be accessible in that way. Although I do see him as kind of elevated on a stage, but nonetheless, you know, people used to gather at the front of the stage before a gig, and I like the feel of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, sort of looking up at him like he's on stage, but he's just on a plinth.
Yeah, and talk while you can still hear yourself.
Well, look, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on. I'm sure, you know, fans out there will be in touch. I'm going to say it now. I think this should be part one, and I think we should do part two when you're a little bit further down the line, and then ultimately, because my brain's working overtime here, part three, we do an episode, you know, the day of the unveiling in Stoke, and chat to yourself and any fans who make it down there. You know, I'm on board. Anything I can do, then you know, just let me know. anything.
You're always
at
doing
all.
a fantastic job for the Mozart
Oh, thank you
community
so
and
much.
family.
Look, I
And
don't.
I'd love to do that. I'd love to take you up on that offer and keep people informed through your show as well as other sources of how they can be part of this. Because
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just give us that email address once more.
okay, you can contact me at info@joesguitars, that's all one word, joesguitars.co.uk.
Brilliant. Okay. Andrew, on behalf of everybody who's listening and myself, thank you very much.
Thanks, Alex. Keep the faith.
Keep the faith, indeed. And what struck me about doing that interview is how much it is about faith. Andrew is absolutely passionate about this, and he has deep, deep faith in the fact that this is going to come off and it's going to happen. And whoever you are, wherever you're listening to this, you might be able to be a part of it. So, you know, get in touch with him and see if you can help make it happen. And of course, I hope you enjoyed listening to that as much as I did doing it. I've got to say that, really. Bit of a trademark, isn't it? So it's now the end. And all I wanted to say is, as always, huge thanks to all of you who listen, who share, who comment on social media, who get in touch. Honestly, it blows me away. I really do feel like I've been accepted into your family. I really, really do. And the Motorcast family operating alongside the Motorhead family is definitely becoming a thing. And if you want more people to become part of it, then all you need to do is share it. So please share the podcast, tell everybody about it, whether they're Motorhead fans or not, whether they're just fans of podcasts, but let them know. And be sure to subscribe and make sure they subscribe so you can get a brand new episode of the official Motorhead podcast, The Motorcast, every time one comes out. Catch you next time.
I don't show you greed. The only god I need is the ace of spades. The ace of spades.